Right now we have Jerry Butchie from the College of Charlestown, who gave a very interesting talk earlier on putting on integrating Unicode in a common list, and we will now talk about the implementation in which he has done just that very thing.
Jerry. Thank you very much. As you can see, in the College of Charleston, the background of that is the common list pipe system. There's a couple of errors in it, but mostly it's there. I had never seen a picture of it, so I drew one out. So what you find, and what we found, is the trick to making all this work is getting, for us, is getting the two type systems to be compatible with each other. Let me just go right ahead with this. This is CL for Java is a project that we're doing in the CS department, CS department of CSC, and I took over the capstone software engineering course a few years ago. I came out of industry. Now, typically, software engineering courses will be things that were you take the students and give them a small project to start to finish in one semester. Okay, now. That doesn't really tell you anything about what the real world is like. So I said, no, we're going to do a very big project with very big tools, and we're going to do it over a long span of time. And by the way, I have something I want to do. This is my way of getting a lot of slave labor to do something I've been wanting to do for a long time. But the idea, and it really is working, by the way, so this is not... You know, this is a win-win situation for everyone. This really is giving the students a real world experience of developing a complex product, developing teamwork skills and using industrial level tools. I grade them the same way I graded people working for me in industry. I've been a director of engineering for a long time. I was an architect, so. We've finished the fourth semester of this, and it already has a well-deserved reputation around the undergraduates in the school. It's like, oh my God, I have to do this. But anyway, all right. So what is this thing we're going to be doing? It's a new original implementation of Common List. That's why we're here. Runs on the virtual machine, written in Java and Lisp. So what's all right? So everybody's doing it. What's different about this one? It's because we're really intertwining it with Lisp. What I mean by that is, if you're a Lisp programmer, this is a Lisp system. It just works the way you want it to do. And if you want to get to Java objects methods, you do it the way you would in Lisp. The other way around works exactly the same way. I remember a lot of times I was doing. Software, and I would have loved to have been using some Lisp code as a submodule of something. And it's typically very hard to call Lisp from anything else. And I said, no, I really want to do it this way so we can go in both directions. It's going to have a complete documented Java API. And by the way, I was the guy that wrote the forum function interface for VaxList, and that left me feeling dirty to this day. I hate foreign function interfaces. So I said, we're going to get to Java without having to do that. All right, so where are we going to start? Well, it turns out that meshing the type systems is the real key to this. Java has very strict typing. Lisp is tangled and dynamic. And so what we did is said, look, we will mimic the Lisp types with Java interfaces because you can multiply inherit with them. We create a root interface that's lisp.common.type.t, and then we define primitive methods for the specific type. I'll show you some examples of that. We also have nested factory classes inside these interfaces so that you can go to lisp.common.type.integer .factory.newinstance, and you get one. All right, so this is the type system. Okay, so let's do an example of how do we look at a simple top level type. Okay, just we're looking at T, atom, number, sequence, and symbol. This is what it actually looks like. Okay, we can put them together like that. No problem. So we say, what's the big deal? Well, now let's start dealing with some complex types. And in this one, what we get is we look at sequence, and then we get list, and we get then Boolean. And if you look at this one, of course, null extends both list and symbol, which also means that any of the methods defined for list and symbol, we all know that nil has to do all of that. And by the way, how many people think nil in common list is really weird? Okay. It's weirder than you know when you try to do it. It's amazing. Anyway, so let's take a look at what some of these things might be, just as an example. For, you know, in looking at number, we have it. And again, you'll see lots of references here to things that help out the Java program. Okay? We not only define number as the number type, extends atom, it's also comparable. Okay? Java.lang.comparable. So we have a contract with the Java programmer that they can deal with list numbers the way they'd like to deal with them. And here's all of the a representative set of the methods. Okay, well, if we look at list, okay, we're in the process right now, having moved to Java 1.5, we're starting to genericize some of these things. So this is the methods for list, which seem very similar. It's very common to you. So you know, get car, get gooder, is it circular, last, some of those things that we're doing. So you can see it looks very Java-y on that side. And yet, of course, if you said open paren car foo, you, in Lisp, it does exactly the right thing. So there's several kinds of types. Now, if we go back into the standard, we have to look at this. The basic atomic types, you know, like base care, fixed num, functions, things like that. These are the atomic types. Those are easy. That's mostly what I've been describing. There are structural types, like destruct. And these things, we create Javified type name and slot names for this. For example, if I take simple destruct, foo, slot A, slot B, well, that's actually going to turn into, the type definition of it is public interface foo extends T, and there's a get slot A and set slot A. And notice that you can put anything into that. I didn't say that it's T that you can put into a slot, but once you get back, you can put any Java object into this. Start to see this. Also, we create a factory method in here. With a new instance, and you give it the values of A and B. That's exactly what you'd expect. Now, if we point out here that we also create the implementing class for the structure inside the interface. It's a nested class inside the interface. And we make it protected because we're going to subclass this. Okay. Let me show you when we get something that's a little different. Like we're going to define a struct var and include foo, which adds a slot C. Well, we kind of do what you'd expect. Var extends foo. Now, for the sake of trying to make this fit. This doesn't have all the you have to understand that that's really looking inside bar doc, when I start subclassing it, I'm referencing the nested class inside foo. And you see that. When I make a new one, okay, then I also, the implementing class, if I look at the constructor for this, it, notice that we've said, look, there's an internal var name, but we also, I think I left the extent off. I'm sorry, my apologies. But the internal class extends the foo implementing class. That's why it was protected. So we can subclass it. And now the constructor for this is going to call the superclass's constructor that takes the first two arguments. So this is how defstruct gets generated. By the way, all of this is compiled at real and generated and runs at runtime. Then there's compound types. And these are, well, the compound types are, you know, vector fixed num 100. This is a vector that will only take fixed nums and has a size of 100. Well, we have a type constraint interface that we start adding, and it has some methods to find it. And we actually call those methods when you try to add things to a vector of that type, we'll look and say, is this okay? Or if this is, if you're saying, if you're giving, you have a vector and you say, is this of that type? We'll actually go through and look at the constraints and say, yes, we can do this. It's fairly straightforward with this sort of adding this into the defining interface itself. Okay. And you know, all of the atomic types have this factory method that will also build type constraint for, like, vector has another factory that says, oh, I would like to make a type constraint for you. And the factory for vector would take a type and a size bin, a type of fixed number, and would give you back an instance of a type constraint object that you can stash away and use that to check anytime you want.
Question?
Sure.
In your implementation of vectors, is the upgraded array only type function just the identity function on types? I mean, is everything a specialized array element function?
That's one of the things that I have to plead ignorance on because I'm not up to it yet. Okay, very good point. Right, there's, as everybody knows, the standard is a little bit interestingly working. We're just trying to get the basis working. Okay, but thank you for that thought. Okay, and so all these things can be, the type constraint, by the way, you can put in any Java class. So you can have a vector of print strings. The compound only ones are, we're still looking at, and this is our thinking now. Okay, that, you know, these are the things it says, it's type, this is a fixed num, and it's a gas station and a Google boutique, for example. Okay, that's a type. That's a com, you know, and or member, these are all compound only types. There's a specific set of them. They're really all variations on satisfies, which is satisfied. And we again have yet another factory where you can say, all right, here's the constraints on it. Give me back one of these objects, and then I can use this to say, when I go and say, this is an instance of this type, is this really meeting the criteria? A lot of this is for, this is a subtype, is a type of. Okay. We're running out of time, so this is going to go even faster. How do we do functions? All All right. Here's the basic pattern that we have. There's a class, a function to us is anything that implements list.common.type.function, which only defines that defines an apply method. And we know that. And this is the definition of apply. And for example, this lambda turns into public class, you know, some made-up name of ours, implements function, and has the apply method that will get handed the list of arguments. And if you were to say sharp quote lambda, in fact, what you get back is a new instance of that. So anytime you see a naked lambda somewhere, buried in the middle of some code, anytime you get there, that class has already been defined by the compiler, and we just get a new instance of it. And yes, functions also can carry their own closure information. I'll get to that. Okay. We also have extra interfaces that make it handy to say, look, this is something that always takes one argument, or no arguments, or whatever. Right now we support up to 11 of them, which is the longest string of arguments and comments to do this. So you can also have something that not only implements function, but it could be something that implements function and function zero. That's lambda nil. Okay, that's exactly what that is. Name functions, like this is what you do when you define something. They're like any other functions, except they have a couple of static members in them. Function, which happens to be an instance of the function class we make at the time that we create the class, and another static field called symbol, which is the symbol that names the function. So if I say fun foo, it's going to be an instance of the lambda, the compiled lambda, in the function slot, and the value of the field called symbol is foo. And symbol function on that symbol will in fact return that function instance. By the way, these are set up as singleton instances. They compile differently. They don't make multiple instances, they only of named things. You say, well, what if I do if I have a defun inside something? Well, you're actually going to recreate the class every time you come through. That's the definition. All right, for the Java programmer, all of the CommList functions are actually directly accessible as static fields in a particular class that we have called CommList functions. So you can have something like car. Java programmer can just go to CommList functions.car, and he's got the function. By the way, by definition, it always implements functions, so you know that you have an applied method. Okay, notice, oh, by the way, I'm going to slip a quick one in. Subclass of function is not a function. That's how we tell whether we're dealing with a macro or a function when we actually look at one. So here's, in fact, what car looks like. There's certain things you have to write by hand. You can't do it with list. There it is. Okay, this is the car function. Notice that we also throw a thing. When something's going wrong, we'll always throw a function exception, which wraps the real exception that we have. That's for when we start looking to the debugger. We can hook specifically onto function exception. We know how to handle it differently. Multiple values. Right now, we just have a multiple value object. It's the easiest thing to do. Okay? But it does mean that we have to generate code to look at. If we don't otherwise know, we don't know whether the thing is giving us value from some 27 levels deep that we're getting multiple value back. So we have to, in fact, check every time we go to deal with one of these things. I'm not worrying about that anymore. Compilation, we compile everything unless it's trivial. Non-trivial means there's a special format. any of the special forms immediately invokes the compiler. If you just say plus 1, 2, no, we'll just read-eval print loop, we'll just run that. We had a first bootstrap compiler running entirely in memory. By the way, we do not create class files directly, us. I don't want to do that. We create Oolong assembler call and assembler code and call Oolong to create the class file for us. Works like a champ. By the way, it's much easier to look at the assembly that you've generated than to try to look at the bytecode. Works, you know. Right now we've got about a dozen special forms that we've implemented. Okay. Right now, also variables under the Bootstrap compiler, they're all looked up in a dynamic environment. It's really slow. Works, but slow. We're just finishing the version 2 compiler, which has got a lot of better binding analysis. If we can put things in local variables in the function, we do. We've got a better hand on closures and closure allocation. All the data structures we use are now lists, because the next thing we do is turn around and start writing a list. Okay. We are just on the edge of being able to start building the rest of the system in Lisp itself. File compilation for us is interesting. We read in a file, wrap it in a no argument lambda, and then compile the whole thing. Our compiler handles nested lambdas perfectly fine. And by the way, it also honors eval when forms. The cute thing we did was we write it out to a standard jar file.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that outer lambda that I wrapped it all in is referenced in the jar file's manifest. So the loader, when you say you want to load, we don't have FASL or whatever, we just say load this jar file. The loader will go find that outer lambda class through the manifest, create an instance of it, and execute it. Turns out to be true.
Well, this is
it works great. By the way, this also means that a Java programmer could augment the list perfectly fine by writing any amount of Java they want and having just that one function that's function zero, and stick that in the manifest with the right tag, and the Lisp system will load it up and execute it, whatever it does. Again, trivial to extend what we're doing. System documentation. We're not good for either side if we're not handling system documentation. We've got full Java doc generated for all the Java code. I keep kicking all my students to make it do it. No, you can't say this is Java doc. They should say what's going on and all that sort of stuff. And we're thinking about doing an extension to, when you've got all those nice doc strings and things like that, we might actually turn that into Java doc, because these are functions that you can call. It's just Java. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to go a little bit beyond the standard documentation strings. We'll obviously gather them in. We'll augment it with any of the context-dependent information, like function arguments and types, what source file did it come from, we can reference other functions, all that sort of stuff. We may even take stuff out of the pre-semicolon comments that precede a function or macro. And what we're then going to do is stick it all into XML and put that out. And this is, now again, I know, this is simplest. I know. This is education. Part of what I'm doing is giving my students a lot of exposure to other things, to other kinds of systems. So we'll put that out, and the Did I say XML? I meant to say XSLT. So we'd be doing transforms in runtime. You say documentation, quote function for this thing, it will take that XML, run the transform, and give it back to you. Okay? If you're in a terminal, you'll just get that text. If you were running in a GUI, presumably we could put it up as some Java help or something like that. We can also take the sum total of it and transform it into docbook, PDF, any of that sort of stuff. And I've got a guy who's doing his bachelor's thesis on putting us all together starting in the fall. And what's interesting is he's worked with me before, and he wanted to do it again. Alright, so file system, what are we doing? Well, again, we're relying entirely on the Java I/O system. Character streams are implemented with buffered reader, buffered writer. That gives me the Unicode support that I'm at. That's the readers are the things that are character and code point sensitive. For binary I/O, right now we're using the random file. And I had one guy a couple of semesters ago. Everybody has seen a very detail-oriented person in their life. I've never seen one like this guy. He would never let it go. We can do a mix of arbitrary byte sizes. You know, you can write out a 7-bit byte, you can write out a followed by a 21-bit byte, you know. It's like, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to do, you know, 8, 16, whatever, no, he did this whole thing. Okay. That's great. I mean, you know. One of the things that's great about students is they don't know what's hard. They don't know. They just go off and do it. It's great. Okay. So how do we type this stuff in the Lisp world? Remember, types of everything are all defined as interfaces. Well, the Lisp, the type system for Lisp file for Lisp I/O is very crude. You know, it's basically character and binary. And are you reading or are you writing? Java doesn't do that. It's a little bit stickier. Okay, so we actually kind of came up with a set of mix-ins where you can see over here we've got something's an input stream, it's an output stream, binary stream, a character stream, and then of course we mix this all this up and then we stick it into some implementing classes. And then Java's very happy. They read the paper a little bit about, you know, some of the advantages we get with this. Because, of course, Lisp, if you have a character file and you call write byte, it's going to say no. But Java would never even let you compile it in the first place. So we have this backing abstract class that throws an exception on whatever you do. And then we have things that implement this, and all they do is override the methods that work.
So would it be easy to make a bivalent stream?
Oh yeah, I just didn't have it in here. You have, you know, there's a character I/O stream, for example. We mix them again and say, okay, I've got a character input stream, I implement this, I implement this, you got a character I/O.
I'm sorry, I meant in the Allegro sense of bytes and characters. Do you still doing things like writing HTTP servers?
Good thought. I'm sure we can make Java code as dirty as we want. All right. Then there's plus. Now this is the one. I'm going to tell you how we think we're going to do it. I have a guy starting in the fall, actually about midsummer when I get back. He's going to do this for his master's thesis. And we've kind of gone far enough that we think that we know we've got the right approach. Yep. And let's talk a minute for about how do we name things in Lisp that are actually in Java. Well, we have a Java package, which is the specialization of a package. We obviously wrote a class called package, and that implements what we want to do. We have a subclass of package that the name of it is the name of a Java package. Java.io, Java.util.logging, for example. And the symbols that they have are form Java class name or Java class name dot member name, like system or system dot out. Okay, this would be in fact java.lang:system.out. This is not bad. By the way, these Java packages, you can do most of the usual things except change them. Right? You can't change what's in there. You can't turn a new symbol into it because you're dealing with a Java library. But you get back symbols that have values and functions. They work just fine. Okay, so. So we've got the symbols that you'll get back, and by the way, you can import them. Okay, you can do a use package on these things. So what's actually in these things? Well, if you look at the value slot, you're looking at for a class name, it's actually the instance of the class, the real Java class. Is right there. If what you have is a Java field, it's the value of the Java field. If you are looking at a method, it is in fact java.lang.reflect.method. And so now you've got your hands on the method itself. And in the function slot, what you've got is a class, what you've got is the constructor. Okay, and over here, you've got a close method.
It's the value of the Java field, which is a primitive type. You wrap it in the object.
Because it's got a type, so we can figure it out.
Right.
Okay, but it's what we're trying to do. Alright, so, close types. Like everything else, your type is defined by a Java interface. And what's interesting, and of course, you know, if you have superclasses, multiple superclasses for a plus class, well, we just string out the interfaces in the same order. And by the way, it turns out that the way in which interfaces are stored in the class, the Java class entity, is identical to how plus does it. It's in the same order, we can use the same topographic sort on the super interfaces. So, and the implementing class is a nested static class inside that interface. And usually it implements function interface, and actually it's called we'll get to this in a minute. Generic functions. There's standard generic function, it's an abstract class that implements the generic function interface. Mm-hmm. We're doing the mock, we're going to do the whole thing. And it's going to be a mix of Java and Lisp as we do it. We're going to do the whole thing. So generic function is a type, so it's got an interface. And all of the implementing classes for this, for methods, subclass standard generic function. And the standard generic function contains the static method that you can use to compute the discriminating function. Gets us into the method combination. There's an interface that defines it. There are several supplied classes, like standard method combination, and all those other nice ones, you know, plus, and whatever. You can get an instance of those classes and tuck it into the class that you just created. And when you get the discriminating function, you can then use this to handle all of, you know, the method dispatch on this. Do the right things. I know it's got a little fancy. So I want to call a Java method, just an arbitrary Java method on something. We're using close to do this. Okay? There is no foreign function interface. We use generic functions. Here's an example that we've got a def generic java.io colon print screen dot print line that takes a stream and an object. And this, of course, is the method, the basic method that says, look, this is specialized to a print screen. And all it does is say call next method. The compiler, seeing this, this actually turns into the call to print line. Okay. The last call next method in a chain is the thing that actually calls the Java method. Okay. For example, if you do this, this will do exactly what you think.
What happens when the Java method does a self call?
If
the Java method does a self call.
Self call?
Yeah. How does this? So the our recursive call? So does it start from the start or is this?
Good question. Thank you. Good point.
Okay.
This is why I come here. I learn things. This is good. Like I said. Now I have a master's student that I can pass it.
Sorry, you're saying
that. Okay. How many academicians have ever done that in their life?
What?
Somebody, they're out of it somewhere, and someone says, hey, by the way, did you think about that? And you say, oh, gee, I don't know. And then you go back to your student, and you say, hey, have you thought about it? How many people have ever done that? Come on. Okay. All right. So, anyway. By the way, you can use multi-methods. Okay? You can specialize these things. For example, like this, you want to count the number of times people go to system.out, and there you go. Call next method will call, in the way we've set it up, to call that original def method.
There is actually an FFI, it just happens to be in terms of generic. You have to write those generic functions in that method to be able to hook into the.
Actually, since I know it's a Java name, okay, I'll generate the def generic myself. Okay,
and the first
method. Okay. I didn't say there wasn't going to be a function interface. I said it's not going to be a foreign. This is very lispy, right? That's what I wanted to do. Okay, and we are going to do the mock. That's our goal. All right, so the engineering, what are we doing? Well, you know, I've got a new team every semester, okay? So this is a classic spiral, okay? And what we do is define specific things that we're going to accomplish in the semester. It takes generally about 3 to 4 weeks to get students up to understanding the system, understanding the tools, how it all works. I've got 8 weeks of development and 3 weeks of work of cleanup. Okay. Basically, if I look at it, I have the equivalent of 2 junior programmers working for me full time. That's what happens. Okay. So just occasionally I get a standout, and that's when somebody works on a bachelor's or master's thesis, and that's where we've done the bootstrap compiler was a guy's bachelor's thesis. Okay. Tool set. Here's what we're using. And let's see, everybody wants to know about benchmarks. We can't really run too many of them yet. But of the things that we've done, we're roughly twice as slow. That's not bad, given what I'm thinking about it. Except around tag and factorial, we're almost even, which is interesting. because, but totally with factorial, we're using the Java big integer. All of our numbers are big integers, fixed nums and big ones. Okay, the distinction just happens to be what their value is. You can go read the paper, you can see. All right. Futures. We really want to support the Java debugging architecture so that when you are in Lisp and something goes wrong, or somebody throws something, you know, whatever, the Java debugger will help you in the way it should. I'd love to do C1 in Swing using our generic functions, of course. So the interesting question is, you know, we obviously aren't really going to do that until we finish most of the common list. Okay, so the question is, do we do this before or after I retire? So, so here's the summary. Okay, yeah, this is new common list version. It's that intertwining with Java. Everybody here knows Lisp, but you have to also understand we're trying to go equally the other way. Okay? Everybody here has seen or has a great package to do something that's big, and you can't call it. You know, that's really too bad. Okay, so I really want it so you know you can do it. We're 2 years into it, 5 to 6 years to do this. This is a big system. You know, in case you haven't noticed. And it's about engineering education, not about market development. But it does have the interesting features. This is our website, just put up by one of the students. It's not fancy. It will get you around to the various things that we're doing. This forum, you want to start coming in and see what we're doing and discussing things. By the way, up here you get the links to our wiki, to some other things that you're welcome to join. Okay, no problem. I'm not giving it out yet. I need about 2 more semesters, so I won't be terribly embarrassed. Okay? So we'll probably by this time next year, you can pick up version 0.3 or something like that. Okay, but it really works. Yes?
Have you done the condition system?
Sorry?
Have you done the condition system?
I need close to do that.
Well,
the condition system is their objects is quite
good. Well, their objects are not.
They don't have to be cross objects, but they can be. Okay. That's one of the things this function exception is our first start at it. You know, in doing in terms of doing restarts and looking at things, the question is how much do we have the Java debugger involved? How much do we do ourselves? You know, I'm not sure. I'm just not figuring it. I haven't gotten it figured out yet. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, I have a question for you and Will. You were talking about multi-valid return. Yeah. Any of the tricks that you know about in your work in this?
I think so, but I've got to make Milo a little bit smarter than what it does. Right now, I'm trying to just get the whole thing to work out. One of my non-goals is high performance. Any other questions?
It's actually now officially our lunch break, and
actually according to mine,
they go. Really?
Yes, they really do.
We'll take your 2 minutes, and then we will break for lunch. And anybody that wants to ask me further questions can ask them during our lunch break.
Sorry. This is when you have a computer with a timer on it. You know?
Well, I started my time about 5 minutes before you did.
Yes, sir.
I'm make the observation that maybe it won't take you as long as you think it will. If you get the system running, can't you like rip off the rest of the code from open source places in Lisp and just
remember this is an educational
thing. Okay, right, you want to write every single function.
Would be an educational lesson. You can
almost a couple of people who have actually started working in Lisp are going, oh my God, this is wonderful. What has this been all my life? I had this one guy who, son of the South Carolina shrimper. You know, you meet the guy and he's got this, rural South Carolina accent. He picked up, he just Public became a Lisp convert. Okay. And what he did was write all the Lisp necessary for parsing all the different kinds of lambda lists, which, by the way, if you look at the CMU CL stuff, is really terrible. Okay. This stuff is really elegant. It works. It's great. You know, so that's what I'm trying to foster. I'm not trying to make this fast. Development. This is education. Yes. Although I very much really want it.
How many test cases have you seen?
of ours, we actually use JU for all the stuff we're doing. We're running about 1,000. Yeah, I'd say about that. I really want your test suite. I think we'll pass 3 or 4 of them, but. Yeah, that's going to be really good.
It sounds to me like you have to do some more work before you can go ahead and use
it. Yeah. I mean, you'll be able to do, when I come back, if we're all here next year, you can get this and start working with it. Okay, one of my goals is for this thing to be usable for some of the people that teach Lisp in the department. We're close to it. But we don't have a formal printer, and we don't really do the right things with strings yet. That's the next few things we're doing. Now I am over time.